Okay, folks, let's have a seat and get started again. Good evening, and many, many thanks to Dooley. I appreciate your taking over. If I can just take a minute, everybody said in the break, how was the meeting? As you know, the Governor's Economic Development Council meetings have been going on, and as chair of the legislature in this county, I'm part of the council, and I've also been part of one of the work groups. There are 8 working groups that have been working on particular areas to develop proposals for the whole count for the full council to consider. So I've been on the energy working group, and that met today from 3:30 to 5:30, and it was the moment when we were going to really reach consensus on which projects we will refer to, write up and refer to the full council. And I have to say, I thought we really needed to be there in person. I think it'll be a surprisingly green set of proposals out of the southern tier. There's going to be a full package of ideas, starting with energy efficiency, marketing, the on-bill financing law that New York has just passed to stimulate people investing in efficiency and renewables, financing a proposal for financing for commercial development of energy of efficiency and renewables. Tech transfer from Binghamton University and Cornell, working together with Corning Glass and other companies. There's an eye-popping kind of amount of research going on in the Southern Tier related to 21st century energy, storage and biomass, solar thin film, all sorts of really interesting stuff. And then a proposal on wind, and in addition, a proposal on workforce around energy issues that will include workforce on Marcellus shale-related jobs and jobs for solar and efficiency and wind sectors as well. So I think it'll be a diverse set of proposals and come together in a really interesting way that really will look like an energy policy that might be able to be emulated through a coherent whole that will be, we hope, a model for the rest of New York State and maybe the country. Why not? Yeah, shoot big. So it's really been an intense period of meetings, and I think it's been worthwhile. So I know the other groups, I think all the groups met today. Thursday is I think Dooley mentioned Thursday is this public forum in our county, 6 to 8 o'clock, the Women's Community Building. Very important for folks to come. There's a pre-registration, but people should just come, even if they haven't called. But I hope they will call us at 721, whatever the number is. All right, Dooley already mentioned the number before.
I didn't because the registration closes today.
Really? Okay. People should just go there. Women's Community Building at 6 o'clock, even if you didn't pre-register. So, all right. Capital plan, if there are any questions on any of that? Okay, thank you. Capital Plan Review Committee has not met since the last legislature meeting. We will meet, instead of Thursday the 8th, we'll meet this Friday the 9th at 3:30. So, and that'll be the Arel Lamaro show with updates on all sorts of things about our facilities and our planning. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yeah, I'll keep it short because I know we want to hear our budget presentation here tonight. We did meet on the 18th of August, and seems like forever ago now, doesn't it? And we had just one resolution, which is on for tonight. We had a bunch of discussions about different things that we've been working on. We continue to work on the minute policy. That'll be back again at our next meeting this month. We did try to schedule a special meeting again, but due to incapacity of some of the members, we weren't able to get that together. I wondered if, Pat, did you want to say anything about the broadband committee? at this point or not?
I would mention that we're in the process of putting together an application for a community foundation grant that has become available. Paula has been spending, I don't know, I think she's left now, but Paula has spent a long time working on this and coordinating. And this has been a real chance for the work of our subcommittees to be highlighted. And it's been really the first opportunity that we've had to begin to put together what we've been working on in our subcommittees in a way that is beginning to look like more of a complete picture. And the timing on our doing that, it just happened to coincide with this opportunity to apply for some grant funding from the Community Foundation. So we've decided to see if we can do that. The purpose of the grant will be to do an end-user survey with some of the people in our rural parts of the county to in a more definitive, data-driven kind of way, demonstrate what some of the needs are for broadband where people are unserved or underserved. So it's pretty interesting.
One other thing we talked about, several of the counties around us have been bringing forth local legislation, local laws regarding being able to put an insert or information on tax bills having to do with the cost of state mandates. The committee did not take action on that, did not move that forward at this point. There seemed to be some antipathy toward that. I'd be more than happy to hear from other folks on the legislature about that going forward.
Thank you, Mike.
And I have one resolution. Appropriation from contingent fund to develop a smart work training program for Tompkins County Mental Health Department. And I so move.
And Dooley seconds. Any discussion? Frank.
Just a quick question, Mike. In the one of the resolves, it mentions that there'll be a development of a consolidation and a more efficient reception area that will integrate some of the billing and records functions. Do you know if that's going to result in a capital program appropriation to reconfigure part of the space? Is there another cost associated with this?
That didn't come up. I'll ask our county administrator if he knows anything about that.
Not that I'm aware of, Frank. That, like Mike said, I haven't heard that in the conversation about this plan. It's all organizational and staff.
Okay. Thank you.
And this is money that we had set aside for these training programs.
Okay, ready to vote? It's a short form roll call.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. All right, thank you very much, Mike, and thank you, Pat. I did send the interim report of the broadband initiative to the staff working on the Southern Junior Council.
Thank you.
If I can ask, I'm going to take a wild guess here that Lee Shurtleff is here waiting for the Public Safety Committee report. Would you mind taking your report next? And
no.
Peter? Okay.
That's fine.
All right. Thank you.
Not sure I'm in condition, you know. I was just sitting to get pumped up to do it, but I'm going to do my best.
All right. Give it a try.
He's thrilled.
I'm thrilled to give this Public Safety Committee report. We had a meeting today. Let's see. What did we hear about? We got a report from the sheriff on exactly where we've been giving tickets. And I must say, I had no idea. But it turns out that by far the greatest number of tickets that have been given are on Pine Tree Road. I would say by a factor of five at least. And next on the list is Route 79, the Slaterville Road. And apparently that's due to Cornell giving tickets in the vicinity of Cornell on Pine Tree Road, and then Route 79 is the traffic that's coming onto Pine Hill Road from east of Ithaca. I asked why it was that we were doing that exactly, And the Sheriff's Department said that there's a tremendous number of accidents around that intersection, and that he was sure that the police presence there was reducing the number of accidents, and there was some evidence to say that they've been reduced by a factor of two or something like that since they've been doing that. So I thought that was interesting. We heard from Susie Cook. It's always depressing to hear Susie Cook, but what I heard from, well, it is depressing. I hear more violence from young people, more violence from young girls, reports of police of firearms being discharged around the county on almost a regular basis. Nobody knows. There was nothing to say what's being to say what it is we can do about that. The increasing drug traffic. I was particularly distressed to hear the reports of the so-called designer drugs or the bath salt sort of things. The things that do give people the high that they get from drugs that have been outlawed, but these are not outlawed, and that there's a booming industry of research in chemistry to find new drugs, new chemicals that give the same effects as drugs do, but have got an H molecule or an OH someplace that means that they're not illegal and it's hard to stay up with them. I found that most depressing. What else did we hear? One thing I know that Lee is going to talk about that I think is a good thing. We're carrying along this this project for finalizing on hiring a consultant to make sure that our 911 center is giving us the kind of service that we deserve, that we should get out of the time and money that we've spent there, and to make suggestions for how we might improve any. My hope is that we'll hear that there are no suggestions, that this is the best 911 center that there is. But that's going to happen sometime, I would think. I think we're going to let the contract probably in less than 2 weeks or something like that. And I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to say. I don't think I have anything else to report.
Okay, you have a resolution.
Yes, I have a resolution. Resolution number J, an appropriation from the Contingent Fund Terminal Pay Department of Emergency Response. I'd like to move that resolution.
Seconded by Jim. Any discussion? Short form roll call.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Lee. All right, Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam McAfee, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. Last time the legislature met, I did not offer a report on our meeting of PDAC, and perhaps we should all delay our reports 2 weeks, because looking at what happened in the committee, it was all very interesting when we passed most of the information at our last meeting. So my report will be very short, I guess, is what I'm offering that up as possible future shortening of our meetings. Anyway, but I did want to report one thing about the meeting, and it goes back to what Jim was talking about earlier about the Finger Lakes region. And Ed Marks and Joe Mariana are creative forces in our county government. Came up with this idea of talking to the 10 county region, Finger Lakes region, to begin to look at some way of seeing if there was a way to work together around sort of economic development issues, and they have met now twice. This time they had some of the economic development directors from the counties, from their cooperative extension directors, were included in that meeting. And what they have begun to focus on is some sustainability issues. Are there ways that they can work together? Are there perhaps some some economic development industries that can be developed around sustainability issues, part of the new green economy. And I've just found this whole thing incredibly exciting. As somebody who spent a lot of time out in Yates County and Chemung County and Steuben and, I don't know, as many others, and last year, I really it's just spectacular country. And what we see out there is that we have this wineries and we have the and the vineyards there, but that people, farmers are hurting, as they are everywhere. And that the one thing that they're looking at for to make money, to pay their taxes, has been the hydrofracking. That is something that they have been lured towards because they're looking for something to keep the farm in their hands. And so this whole concept, the idea of working together with other counties in the Finger Lakes region to try and develop some kind of block in terms of economic development, but it was also just it could involve other things too. I mean, for example, the whole issue of water and the Finger Lakes region that is so incredibly important to us. So I think this is one of the most exciting things that I have seen happen. It has, I think, has tremendous potential. From what Ed has said, the response has been terrific. There's a lot of interest on the part of the other counties, and so they are looking, as we are, in ways of preserving this beautiful country that we all live in. Thank you. We have a meeting tomorrow at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Thank you, Pam. And Ed proposed that as part of the Agriculture Committee of the Southern Tier Council, and that has become the foundation of their proposal to the full council. Any questions for Pam? All right, thank you very much. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim
thank
Dennis.
You, Martha. Now it's time for what we all came for. The county administrator is going to present the tentative 2012 budget. You're on.
Thank you. I was going to say I was thrilled to do this, but
I love it when people bring in new material.
I am going to take about 15 or 20 minutes just to introduce this budget, go through some of the distinguishing features of the 2012 budget, understanding that we have many weeks where we can get into the details of what's presented in this very thick document. We're all going to emerge from this process a little stronger by carrying around a book that's, I think, a little bigger than it has been. And we're going to go through that. And I'm going to do my best over the next few minutes to distill some of the things that are in here to give you a profile or portrait of the 2012 tentative budget. You know, I can't do anything without my PowerPoint, so. And you also know that whenever we talk about our budget, the county budget, we really need to at least take a quick look at the factors in our environment that are affecting the budget. Since we are so closely tied to the economy because we're in the human service business, we do like to begin all of these presentations by just a quick snapshot of how we're doing. What's the economy looking like? What are the things in the environment that may be affecting us in 2012? This, in turn, helped us really shape the 2012 budget, again, looking at things that might relate to dependence and reliance on our services, beginning with high unemployment. We've talked about this at some length. You know that unemployment, compared to the rest of the country, is enviable, but compared to Tompkins County in our history, we are at remarkably high levels of unemployment still. It shot up right after the recession, and the discouraging thing is it stayed very high, again, for us ever since really the recession began in 2008. Inflation is emerging. It's back with us. It's running right now at 3.6%. It's been our friend for the last few years. But again, inflation is back with us and is a factor in our budget. Low consumer confidence. This is front page stuff. I think everybody knows just the mood of the country right now with respect to its uncertainty about where the economy is going. And as long as there is low confidence among consumers, they're not spending money, and if they're not spending money, we're not realizing sales tax revenues as a result of consumer spending. sort of still on a downslope. And if you look at the blue line, it's interesting. Upstate New York typically lags behind the rest of the country. In the last month of survey, the country really came down to our level and a little bit below, real drop-off in confidence. We're looking at a continued high level of dependence on services that we provide. You've heard me say often that I think the best barometer of that dependence is looking at food stamp cases, where you're eligible for food stamps as circumstances within your household change by the loss of hours, by the loss of perhaps one person in the household's job, really triggering a reliance on public assistance, public services, including a lot of people who probably never thought they'd be coming to the county for help. If you look at this graph, you can see that is about as close to vertical as you ever want to see in a chart. You also see that it doesn't show much sign of slowing down. We saw one month, the last month, where we seem to have a little bit of stability, but we're up 8.5% in food stamp caseloads over where we were just a year ago. And last, the uncertainty of the economy. It looked as if back in the springtime when we began to plan this budget, the economy may not be great, but at least it seemed to be stabilizing and showing some traction. We actually pointed to the stock market as an example of maybe room for optimism. And I don't have to tell you what's happening in the stock market right now. It's down by another 200 points, I think, today. But it really is an indicator of uncertainty in the economy, and we have to be concerned about that as we put a budget together. We have a new element in our environment this year, and that's the statewide property tax cap. It has been called the 2% cap ever since it came out because that was really the baseline of the cap. We've talked about adjustments that will be possible in the cap, and I'd like to go through kind of where we are now with the property tax cap. The base number, this is the old 2%. At 2%, that would give us the capacity to raise our levy by $812,000. Now, there are some carve-outs that were a part of the legislation, and you know we've struggled to get clarity on those carve-outs. We believe we do have that clarity now. There is a recognition of tax base growth. I think we call it new lumber sometimes, new construction, not inflation, but real growth in our property tax base. We had some of that during the period that it was being measured. And that added about 0.6% to the base number. We also, legislation provided a carve out for some pension growth, but not all. For perspective, pension growth is more like $700,000 or $800,000, so $200,000 of that was allowed to be carved out of the cap. That added another 0.5% to our ability to increase the levy. Pilots, we really haven't talked much about pilots, but the cap is really a cap on the combination of property taxes and pilots, because pilots are just another way of collecting taxes. So the entire amount has to be capped. Because our pilots grew, that means you can levy a little bit less, and that adjustment factor actually took away a couple of tenths of a percent. So by the time you get to the bottom line, our property tax cap is about 2.9%. There's some decimals that go out beyond that, but it's about 2.9%, which would allow us to raise our levy by about $1.2 million. So that's the way that element of our environment seems to have shaken out. Now, as we get into the budget itself and what is affecting the budget, we're going to call what we're experiencing cross currents, because I think for the past several months we've been talking about some of the things that are applying upward pressure to our budget, causing higher costs or lower revenues that drive the budget up. But as we've indicated over the past couple of weeks, as we've really gotten into the weeds of the budget, there are also some things that have cut our way that are allowing some downward pressure in the budget. And we're going to go through kind of how those cross currents are affecting 2012. In terms of upward pressure, pension rate growth is still with us. We've talked about how there's been, on the right side of the chart, we'll talk about this, but there's been a little bit of a slowing of the rate of growth in pensions, but it's still growing, and we'll talk about the number of that, and it's a significant amount of growth. And whenever we talk about pension benefits, and this carries into health benefits as well, it's not because our employees are suddenly earning extremely generous pensions. We haven't enhanced benefits. We've done none of those things. It's simply, in terms of the pension program, state's still recovering enormous losses of assets that it suffered when the stock market collapsed back in 2008, and we're still in the recovery period for that. Health benefits, our employees have worked with us to develop a consortium that has saved taxpayers throughout the county about $1 million a year. We've essentially taken our savings from that, and we're now growing health costs alongside of medical inflation, basically, but we've done a lot to reduce that cost. Some of our unfunded mandates, this is a part of the story that we've been telling for some time, part of our unfunded mandates are growing, some of them significantly causing pressure. We've lost state aid, and we'll talk about that. The absence of a mortgage tax has been on our radar for some time now, and it is affecting 2012, as is inflation. So those are very familiar factors that we've been talking about for some time, all of which are negative, all of which apply upward pressure on the budget. However, in terms of cross currents, the things that have helped us as we've tried to bring this budget into balance. Again, the rate of pension growth has slowed, and I'll hit the numbers in just a minute, but I think we've talked about this before. That is largely the result of really an adjustment in the earlier estimates provided to us by the State Comptroller's Office that were not misguided. They simply assumed normalcy in the world, and normalcy has meant in our lives annual wage growth and stable payrolls. And what we've seen in this county is we haven't had wage growth, and our workforce has actually declined. So that adjustment is made in these numbers. There has been a significant reduction in the estimate of pre-K special education costs, and I'll talk about those when we get to that slide in a second. This is a mandated program, though, and this is a really good example of where departments came together and looked at all of the costs within their budget, took a very hard look at what they could do to take dollars out and to align the budgeted number that they put into our document as closely as possible with their actual spending history. So programmatic changes, really sharpened pencils, and this is a good example where internal savings have been generated to help us balance the 2012 budget. Another example is in DSS, and we'll talk about this in a bit more detail in a second, where DSS has accepted the challenge of a different kind of revenue environment that we're in now and found ways to maximize the revenues that are available to bring into our budget, first theirs and then ours, to help, again, achieve savings and help us balance the 2012 budget. I certainly didn't see this coming, but utility costs in the 2012 budget are going to be lower than in 2011. In part, that's because we practice good conservation. It's also because of the market itself. The market right now has natural gas prices that are lower than they were before, so that savings has been taken in the 2012 budget. The CHA has been, at least the plan has been, to divest of the CHA. That was a $200,000 item in the 2011 budget, part of the target when we prepared our early forecast, and now a decision has been made to proceed with the divestiture of the CHA. So those are the major ups and downs that are affecting us. I just wanted to put a dollar sign on some of those major changes. And again, there's thousands of moving parts in this budget. This document wouldn't be so heavy if there weren't a lot of things that were affecting our bottom line. These are the major drivers that we're talking about here. So pension costs, again, the rate of growth is a bit slower. It's the yellow part of that chart. Rate of growth is a bit slower than was originally projected. At the same time, it's expected to rise by $700,000 local in 2012. Our health benefits, this is consistent with where we were even in the early spring, look to be going up by $900,000 local in 2012. Our Medicaid costs, I'm going to stick with this one for just a minute. Medicaid is the largest unfunded mandate that we have, the largest single bill that we have in our entire budget. Medicaid is going to go up by $600,000 next year. It's not an estimate. It's going to go up by $600,000 in 2012. And it's really the result of two things that are affecting Medicaid. The first is every year Medicaid grows by 3%. They call it a cap on growth. It has become a guaranteed increase of 3% a year in Medicaid. And on an $11 million bill, that's $300,000 plus. That's a part of that change number. The other change is the result of calendar creep, where every so often, instead of making 52 weekly payments, you make 53. The calendar catches up with you. This is one of those years, unfortunately. In 2012, we will make 53 Medicaid payments to New York State. And so combined, those have a $600,000 effect on our Medicaid mandated bill. State revenues are, as we had expected, down, and they're down pretty significantly for 2012. You can see that it's a $1.3 million reduction. The footnote is important because we don't want to overstate or misrepresent anything. A part of that loss is offset by increased federal revenue that relates to the way welfare costs are being restructured in the state's new budget. Still, the net effect of that is about $800,000 or $900,000, and I draw a line here because I think perspective is really important. When you look at 2012, what we expect to get in state aid compared to 2009, we're down by almost $5 million over that three-year period, a very significant reduction in revenue available to us from the state. We've talked about this before, the loss of the stimulus, which we had plugged into the 2011 budget to the tune of $800,000, not replaced by a mortgage tax. So that has an $800,000 effect on the budget. Those are the major ups that we're dealing with. Now to the good news half of the chart. In terms of downward pressures, this is the pre-K item that I talked about earlier. This is a mandated program that costs local dollars $2.7 million. To the credit of the Director of Public Health, his staff, they sat down and they looked at this program under a microscope. And the budget request that we received from them reduced the cost of this for 2012 by $600,000 without diminishing service provided to the kids that we serve, which is a pretty remarkable achievement in that category. And I'll stick with that for just a second. That gives us $600,000 of savings to pay for some of those things that are going up. Instead of raising taxes or cutting other programs, it generated $600,000 worth of internal savings available to us to help pay for the things that are going up so rapidly. The other example in the mandates, DSS, we kind of bundled the DSS mandates, everything other than Medicaid, I'd say, creative maximization of revenues, and I'll let Tom Herndon and Patricia Carey go into the details with you when they're here, an actual reduction of $400,000 in the local cost of DSS mandates that include things like foster care, adult protective, things like that are a part of their budget. So a net reduction in the local cost of those mandated programs.
Excuse me, Joey, didn't you say earlier today that had to do with some changes in state law that enabled them to do things that they hadn't been able to do?
In part it does. They were able to move money from one part of the budget into the program part of the budget. So they were able to transfer money from, call it their administrative accounts, into their mandates. So if nothing replaced the money they took away from their administrative costs, we're no better off. But what they were able to do is to take advantage of a change in law and the way the block grant dollars were allowed to be used to offset that removal of money from administration of programs. And that's what I mean in terms of revenue maximization. They came together and they figured out how to really improve their situation at a time when there was a lot of change in the air.
Excuse me, Joe. This is due to a change in the state law that they somehow learned how to take advantage of. Is that what you're saying?
In part, yes. In part, yes. There was a change in the way the FFFS block grant was allowed to be used that gave them latitude to apply it here. So they were able to move money tied to that they can move into programs from administration of programs. And again, a transfer is a net neutral, but then replace that lost money in administration with this new latitude in the block grant program. So again, the effect of that is $1 million in a rather unexpected location that's available to help us cover the costs that are increasing in 2012. talked about utilities and the sale of the CHA. Together, those resulted in savings of $400,000. So those are the major ups and downs that are affecting the 2012 budget. And that leads to, now that you're given those factors, how do you structure a budget within the parameters that we have been given for 2012? And that became really an exercise in applying the savings that we've talked about, spending reductions, and the taxing authority that we were granted to build a balanced budget. I'm going to go through a numbers drill here, and when I talk about budgets, I don't like to get numbers heavy, but it is a budget, so we're going to go through some numbers here.
Could I ask a CHA question?
Sure.
The $200,000 was money that we had in last year's, thinking we would need it this year too, but it's not needed this year. We're selling, or we're going to try to sell the CHA, and whatever income we get for that will probably net us nothing because we will have to hire somebody to run it during the transition period. So there's nothing in our budget about the CHA now. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
And in fact, let me roll the tape back a little bit. In 2011, there's $200,000 of target money, local dollars in the 2011 budget, that originally was intended to pay for the first half of the year. The presumption that by the second half we would have divested, or we would have drawn down another $200,000 that we put in reserves to cover the second half of the year. So the presumption at that time was that come 2012, either we'd have a base to start with of $200,000, or we would be out of the business. So there was $200,000 in target money in 2011. Once we made the decision to sell the CHA, that money isn't needed in target anymore. The sale occurs, so it can go to pay for other programs and services. With respect to 2012 budget, the CHA is in the 2012 budget. The health department has an OTR that has one-time money behind it that would pay for either another year's worth of county operation if we don't find a buyer for the CHA, or to pay for those management fees that we would expect to pay during a transition. If that occurs, the presumption is that sale proceeds would replenish the amount of money we will take out of reserves to pay for that 1 year of operation. So it is in the budget.
Thank you.
It was a long answer, wasn't it?
Thank you.
In terms of the fiscal parameters that we were given when the process began, as you recall, the legislature asked for a couple of ways to look at the budget. One was a recommended amount of 5.4% levy increase. Wanted to see what could be supported with that, but also wanted to see what could be supported if we were to maintain or stay within the cap. So I'm going to show you what those parameters mean to us. In terms of levy growth under the cap, again, the cap is about 2.9%. That compares to the recommended budget that I'm providing you tonight, which calls for a 5.4% increase in the tax levy. In terms of dollars available from property taxes under the cap, we would have $1.2 million in additional levy authority. Under the budget that I proposed, it would raise that levy by $2.2 million. The impact on the average home, in an average home, we have at $160,000. We stayed within the cap is $22. At the recommended amount, it's $47. So the impact on an average home under the recommended budget is $47. In terms of local spending capacity, how much can we spend in local dollars if we are at those two levy levels? And that's what these numbers show. Under the cap, we would have an allowance, basically, of $76.7 million in local dollars. If we were to increase that to the higher amount that's recommended, we would have an allowance of $77.8 million. And that would mean spending growth under the cap that would be less than 1%, 0.8. Local spending growth under the recommended budget would be 2.2%. So those are the parameters that we've been working within. So again, those are the allowance amounts, 76.7 and 77.8. The requests that came in from departments through the sum of their OTRs amounted to $79.4 million. which meant that we had a gap of $2.7 million under the cap that we had to deal with, and $1.6 million under the recommended budget that I have put in front of you tonight. In terms of closing that gap, how did we close the gap? And in your budget, there is basically an amount for the cap, and there's an amount for the recommended. Under the cap, we've applied $900,000 in one-time funds. About half of the one-time money is to sustain the CHA that we talked about earlier with Dooley. The other half is to fund generally one-time items. The same amount of one-time money would be applied in the recommended budget.
I'm sorry, I'm not understanding this. This is if we grant all of the OTRs, is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that in the cap, we've got a gap. Under the cap budget, we have a gap of $2.7 million.
Gap between what and what?
What the department's asked for and the amount of money we have available to spend. So we're 2.7 short under the cap. We're 1.6 million short under the recommended budget. And I'm just walking you through how we close that gap. So in part, we closed it by using one-time money for, in almost every case, one-time items.
Joe, can you go back to the last slide? With the levy growth, the relationship between the levy growth and the local spending growth, we talked about that.
This slide.
Could you refresh my memory on how the, well, if you talk about it under the cap, it's 2.9% of a levy growth, but 0.8% of local spending growth, or under the recommended budget, it's a 5.4% levy growth and only a 2.2% spending growth. How do those numbers relate to each other?
Well, local spending is supported by the combination of property taxes, sales taxes, and some other general revenue. So that's local spending. So what this slide says, at 5.4%, we could raise our property tax levy by $2.2 million. Right? So that becomes money available to help us pay our expenses. With that $2.2 million, we have the capacity to support a $77.8 million local budget. It gives us enough money to buy $77.8 million of things with local dollars. And when you compare that local spending capacity, that $77.8 million, to the local dollar budget in 2011, it's a 2.2% increase in local spending and less than 1% under the cap.
And it's a coincidence that it's 2.2 million and 2.2%.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. So again, in terms of closing the gap, the budget provides for 900,000 in one-time funds, and again, half of those would go to carry the CHA for a year. And again, I expect those to be replenished with sale proceeds. Departmental rollover, a request for $300,000, again, for one-time things. Those rollover amounts have been applied in the amount of $300,000. So there's $1.2 million that's covered with that source of one-time money, again, for one-time things. And that means that under the cap, we would have to cut $1.5 million worth of spending. These are OTRs requested by departments. $1.5 million would have to be cut under the cap. $400,000 would have to be cut under the recommended budget. Does that slide make sense? So again, under the cap, we would have to cut $1.5 million. Under the recommended budget, we have cut $400,000 in spending. I'm just going to touch on these quickly just to might clarify some of these points. So the amount supported under a tax cap would mean that we could not fund $1.5 million, local dollars, in restorations that have been requested by our departments. And that is above and beyond cuts that departments have absorbed. They haven't asked for the money back. They made their cuts and they haven't asked for the money back in the form of OTRs. That $1.5 million is the equivalent of 3.8%, a 3.8% cut in locally controlled spending. There are cuts in discretionary spending under the cap. Road paving would be cut by 20%. There'd be staffing reductions in several departments. These are not wholesale reductions. They are relatively small numbers, but there would be staffing reductions in those departments. There'd be reduced work weeks in several departments. And there'd be reduced funding for several programs, including human service agencies and rural libraries and the REC partnership. So in terms of how the tax cap budget is structured, that would be the consequence. The recommended budget allows for the restoration of many of those things that would be cut under the cap, but still, there's $400,000 in restorations that are not funded. It's the equivalent of about a 1% cut in locally controlled spending. If you recall, those are the non-mandated items, non-fixed cost items in our budget. It's the equivalent of a 1% cut there. This budget does enable most of our programs and services to be maintained. We've been able to take the savings that have been generated internally by the things that we talked about before and transfer those savings into allowing us to keep most of our programs and services in operation.
Joe, I'm sorry. How does this does not fund $400,000 in requested restorations relate to the two slides ago where it does not fund $1.5 million in requested restorations?
Because under the cap, it's $1.5. Under my recommended budget, so you're getting tonight,
okay,
it's only $400,000. And I put quotes around only.
Yep.
The paving cut under the recommended budget is equivalent to 1.7 miles of paving. At what depth of paving is that?
I think it's an inch and a half. It's $80,000 a mile is the benchmark that
so
I was given by
So it's really
Bill.
Minimal paving you're
I
talking
believe it's
about.
An inch and a half topping. Right, and that what Dooley's talking about is that next slide. Under the recommended budget, there are cuts. And among the cuts would be an 8% cut in our paving budget. That's about a 1.75 miles. Funding for the library would be affected. There would be four fewer months of Sunday openings at the library. We would be reducing a portion of the COPS-funded child welfare programs in the Department of Social Services. I see a hand up.
How does the change in the Sunday openings at the library impact the maintenance of effort requirement?
We will satisfy maintenance of effort. We will be one of the OTRs that has been recommended is enough money to get them to their maintenance of effort level.
Does maintenance of effort in the library only apply to funding, or does it also apply to hours and services?
Well, it applies to funding. At the same time, they have an obligation to stay open for so many hours per week or per year. So they will have to struggle with that.
Pat's question reminded me that census figures make us bigger.
Yeah.
And that increases the number of hours they have to be open. Is that what's being used in this budget?
I don't think they hit that threshold. So that, yeah, so they're going to have to go to the state and ask for a waiver, and at some point they're going to have to raise those hours to the higher level.
This will keep them at their, actually, this will keep them at 55. Without this, they'll still be at 55. They'll need this to get to their state.
Go ahead, Peter.
Hi, Joe. This is all coming too fast for me to assimilate, but I'm trying, okay?
Use a microphone, Peter.
Yeah. I was just trying to think another way of phrasing. I'm confused, but let me go on. it's my understanding now that if we were to abide by the tax cap, that would require something like a 3% cut in the budget, if I got these numbers right.
It's about a 3.8% cut in locally controlled spending. And you remember our pie chart that shows only half of our local dollars we control and can cut. So it's
right.
The equivalent of a 3.8% across the board cut.
Right. Okay, so before we were talking, when we had the 5.4% estimated budget increase, we were talking about if I remember right, a 7.8% cut.
That's right. That's right.
So with the tax cap, we would make a 4% cut compared with the 8% cut, roughly, that we were making with the 5.4% increase in. I think I got it. I can't phrase it quite right. But.
Well, I guess, Peter, what I would say is that some of the money that we were fearing we would have to achieve by cutting programs and people, we've been able to achieve by things like what the health department did with the pre-K program and finding money, with what DSS did and so forth. So that's really, I mean, that's the good news part of this budget, that we found savings. We found the savings we needed to stay within those parameters. But some of those savings came in places where we hadn't anticipated, like the pre-K program and like utility costs. And so
right, I understand. Okay, thank you.
I mean, Kevin and Joe have been working on this budget all year long, and at every point they give us their best guess, best estimate, and like David and others, of given the known conditions right now, this is what we expect. So when we set the target back in May, they transfer that to what's the spending cut going to have to be to achieve that.
I understand that. I'm not complaining or anything like that. I'm just trying to understand what the numbers are now compared to the decision that we made in the TCAT room some 4 months ago.
Right. And again, the savings came from different places than we had expected. I've only got a few more slides here. I can work through. I think it's important to look at this slide. If you look at workforce, in terms of what we've done, and if there's a sense that we really haven't done enough belt tightening, I think these are important numbers to take a look at. If you look at the decrease over the past 3 years, and the next slide is really going to drive this home, there's been a significant change, and the change didn't stop in 2012. We've taken another 24 FTEs out of our roster for 2012. Some of those come from the CHA, but not all. Many come from other places through voluntary reductions, mostly, of workforces.
Just to be clear, if the public is watching this, it's not that it went, those two bars on the right, 2012 cap is below 2012 recommended. Those
right.
are not, it's not like it went up again
that's,
this year.
That's a good point, Martha. So we're showing you both the cap number, which would have fewer employees, and the amount that I'm recommending. And then if you want to take a look really at the aggregate effect over the past few years, and we've heard that Cornell has reduced its non-faculty roster by about 9% since 2009, we are tracking right alongside Cornell in terms of reductions to our roster. We're down by 8.7% with the recommended 2012 budget. And if you put a pencil to that, those 68 positions that have come off the roster, that's the equivalent of a $4.8 million annual savings in salary and fringe by that reduction. And again, they didn't stop in 2012. We're down by another 3.3%. And that in itself is $1.7 million savings. Quickly, other changes and initiatives. There is funding in this budget for the relocation of the legislature, the swap between buildings. There is money put in the budget to support that. Mental health will talk to you about a staffing realignment in their department that's going to result in a reduction of 4 positions within that 60 or so person department. Health, again, the CHA we've talked about, that's transitioning in this budget. Small dollars, but I think important in terms of the long-term ability to plan for our infrastructure. There is a new planning ITS highway collaboration on GIS and really getting our highway system rapidly into a GIS database so that we can track and plan for improvements to our infrastructure. Go ahead.
Joe, the mental health staffing realignment, the resolution we passed earlier this evening regarding the Smart Work training program, does this bullet take into account that Smart Work training?
I think Smart Work helps things like this. It helps departments do as much with less staff. There's not a cause and effect between those two things. This is, again, they're realigning functions within the department. You're going to see some positions created, some positions deleted. So again, smart work helps to our departments. That 68-person reduction in roster, be even harder to maintain operations at that level if we weren't doing things like smart work to become more efficient and productive. But it's not a direct cause and effect in mental health. A quick run through the bottom line numbers, and this really focuses on the budget that I'm recommending tonight, which is would increase the levy by 5.4%. If that was approved, that would mean that our total budget for 2012, all sources of money considered, would be $161.3 million. That's a 1.4% increase over the year before. The local budget, the share of that larger budget that we pay mostly with property and sales taxes, would go up by $1.6 million. That's a 2.2% increase in our local supported budget. The tax levy, as we've said, would rise by 5.4%. That's $2.2 million. The tax rate grows by less than that because our base is growing. So the tax rate effect is 4.5%. We said before that the effect on the average homeowner, not all, but average homeowner, is $47 compared to 2011. That's a 4.5% increase. And again, the FTEs are down by 24-plus positions. That's a 3.3% decrease. So the outcome of all this, we have been able to maintain our core services. We have been able to do that within the fiscal targets that we have been given. Now, if we can just spend another 2 or 3 minutes on the new budget format, and I'll go really quick because we're going to spend more time on this in committee. I'd just like to highlight, because you have a when you open this document, it's going to look a lot different than what you've seen before. It's going to be thicker, but I hope it's going to be easier to read and a better decision tool for you, and it's stuff that we've talked about at retreats and other planning sessions. Importantly, if you look at Section 2 of your new budget, for the first time, I believe, you have a consolidated county budget in here. You know where we spend money, gross and local, in the county. It's a consolidated budget. I think it helps simplify what we do greatly. There are other countywide factors that are shown, I think, in a very readable way in Section 2. When you get into the departmental budgets, a couple of changes that you're going to see. First, the first page of all of our departmental budgets starts simple. What is the total and local amount of money that is in the 2011 budget for that department, and how much has been recommended for 2012? If you go farther down the page, it summarizes each of their budgeting units. You know, many of our departments have separate units. It shows you the local dollars by budget unit, which are then provided in greater detail as you go by. If you look at the departmental budget, it has been that our departmental budgets had a line item for every position in the department, which is why the Department of Social Service budget ran forever, because every position had a line item. We've tried to make this easier to understand where the money's going. So instead of 100 different positions, we have a single line that says salaries and wages, because that's what you want to know. How much are we spending in salaries and wages? If you want to know who's getting that amount of money, or whether we can provide that information for you. But this rolls certain things up to make this, I believe, an easier-to-use budget for you. It also consolidates the revenues. You can see how much state aid, how much federal aid, and how much local money supports each department's budget. Now we get to the way 2012 has been structured, and it's a unique structure because of the cap. In the middle part of the departmental budget, you'll see the budget that can be supported within the cap. And we will explain when we get to the expanded budget committee how those numbers were arrived at. And it'll get a little complicated because there's some judgments applied. But that's the column that you're going to want to look at when you see how we've structured a budget that can be paid for within the cap. And then to the far right is the amount that we have recommended. That's what you will see in each of the departmental budgets. The departmental rosters, we think we've made those more readable, so you can see where the activity is within a roster and where what the positions are. The OTRs are very traditional, except we made them portrait instead of landscape. Otherwise, they should look very familiar, because in the survey that we took last year, you said this is one thing that you like a lot and you really don't want to see any change. So there they are. I think the last part of each departmental budget, you recall the program impact summaries, assessment summaries. We've included excerpts from each of those program impact forms so you can see the programs delivered by that department in summary form, just how much they spend, how many staff are involved, the purpose, and the mandate classification. So there are a number of changes in this budget that we think you will find helpful, and I do want to thank Kevin Sutherland for doing a really tremendous job in taking a vision of a better budget and converting it to the document that's on your desk tonight. He's really done well. He's had help from interns, and I'm very pleased with the way this came out. The budget will be less about cosmetics and more about substance. We'll get into that over the course of a lot of budget reviews. I guess tonight is the first step of the long journey.
Thank you so much, Joe and Kevin, and every other staff member who has labored over this, all of our department heads especially. It is certainly feels better than we thought we would feel at this point. And, of course, we also know that numbers still can change. So I really do appreciate all the tremendous amount of work that's gone into this. And I hope there's still some summer weather left so that you can know that there, you know, was a summer. Jim, did you want to, before I go on to other
Brian
people?
Well, Brian actually had his hand up first. I hope he's not going to ask five questions.
All right.
Do I ask five? No.
Brian, then Dooley.
First off, Joe, thanks for all this. I'm glad that you're much better at budgets than you are at estimating times, but that's okay.
How long did I? I didn't even look at my watch.
One question and then a comment. $400,000 in requested restorations. That is the OTR pool.
It's the amount of the OTR pool that we didn't put money behind in the recommended budget.
Okay. I guess that was my comment because it was my understanding, and maybe wrongfully so, obviously wrongfully so, that whatever the adjusted cap was, that anything above that was part of the OTRs.
No, you're correct, and okay. Maybe I've explained it.
But I thought, yeah. Okay. But yeah. I thought we were going to deal with it from there. But.
You will. So okay. So when you open up that new budget, you're going to see the cap budget. It's there, the amount that can be supported under the cap. And then you will see OTRs. So you will see what the department asked for and what I've recommended. And my recommendations take us to a levy increase of 5.4%. You will still be looking at each OTR the department submitted to build that budget. So that would be a very traditional approach. Anything above the cap. In fact, if you want to look at, because we were able to do OTRs under the cap, we've shown you that mm-hmm. in one section, and then we've also shown you all the details of caps or of OTRs in excess of the caps. So you okay. can look at those.
So in terms of OTR presentations, we're going to hear more than just the $400,000 addition that yeah. they're asking for.
You will.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank yeah. you.
So I got Dooley and then Pam. Let me just say, the presentation time included questions. So,
how long did I take?
I don't even
know. Look at my watch.
Trivial comments. I miss colored paper, but I appreciate you saving money by not having colored paper. And it's bittersweet to see the courthouse on the cover. It's still our home.
Maybe not next year's budget. Pam?
It's for copyright.
So the OTRs include both the amount of money over the cap, but it also includes OTRs that you did not approve that are not part of the recommended budget. Is that right?
That's correct.
In excess? Okay.
You'll see the whole universe of OTRs.
Okay.
Everything.
All right.
And again, where it will get complicated in the explanation is some OTRs we were able to support even in the cap budget. So you'll see those. Those are in here, so you can see what they are. And they're look at the table of contents and find those. So again, as we go through this process, we will try to make sure we're very clear on how that worked, which OTRs were funded even below the cap. And again, you'll see the full universe of things that were requested by the departments, and you'll have a can say no.
Or yes?
Kathy, Jim, Carol.
Thanks. Thanks for that summary. I know we're going to hear a lot more about it. I have a question for you about the pension carve-out. Just in general, can you give us an idea of what the framing or the rationale was behind the particular pension carve-outs that we got or didn't get, however you want to talk about it?
Well, I think so, and I think it was in the rhetoric of the 2% cap. The state said any pension growth above 2%, it's carved out. And I think the rhetoric said, since we're only going to let you raise property taxes by 2%, anything above 2% of pension growth will let you carve out. Well, it was pretty disingenuous because it wasn't a 2% increase in pension costs. It was a 2% increase in the pension rate applied to the payroll base. So it really said governments have to pay the first 12.5% growth on pensions. Anything above that, you can carve out. That's 2% on rate because the rate was 16.3%. They said anything above 18.3%, you can carve out. Well, that's 12.5%. We're using a lot of percentages. That's a 12.5% increase in costs before you can carve it out of the tax cap.
I figured it was something weird. I'll probably ask you about it again in a different way.
Okay.
Thanks.
Jim? All right, you want to go, Carol?
Yeah, I just have a question about where you have in here the program summaries, mm-hmm. and you have total expenditures and revenues. Do those include staff, or is that for program costs? Okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And there'll still be a separate document that shows you the full program impact forms, but this is just an excerpt to give you a sense of what they did.
Just thank you. It does look quite clear. I'm very sorry, though, that I ran into you the day you were looking at the beautiful picture of the waterfall and mentioned that our photographers and artists like to get paid when we use their work. So that's why we have the courthouse instead of a beautiful waterfall in here, folks.
Okay, Jim.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Kevin, your staff. I was fortunate enough to be at a meeting that Marsha organized this morning in Joe's office for the local media. And I have great respect for what the media has to do. These are people who come into our meetings and look at a big thick book like this and have to try to make sense out of it. What I heard around the table, and they can all yell out if I'm not saying what is accurate, that it seemed to be easier for them to look at this particular document as compared to some we've seen in the past. It's simpler, it gives you more information more quickly, and that to my ears was ample evidence that what we have is something new and different, and it will help us make decisions. The work that was done to get us to this point is pretty amazing, I think, and I, for one, certainly appreciate it. I have two other items on the agenda.
Before you go on, do we have Monday is the first expanded budget committee meeting,
12
right?
12 and 13, right.
Okay, and is there a schedule yet of the departments?
That'll go out tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, let me just make a comment about somebody ought to fess up to who put that article about decision fatigue in our mailboxes. That was amazing to read. Thank you, Kathy. And if anybody hasn't read it, please go back because it, I mean, we
actually,
sort of knew.
Kathy did it, but
okay, but you gave us the article.
Thank you.
It sort of, research behind something that we have all experienced, which is that we get worse at making decisions the longer in the day or night that we go, and glucose levels have an effect. And so as the schedule of departments gets figured out, I think it behooves us to think about the toughest decisions ought to be handled earlier in the meetings as opposed to, well, we'll just get through the easy things first. So we'll try to keep that stuff in mind. All right. Go ahead, Jim.
That's right. I have two more resolutions. They were in your folder, Resolution H.
extension of 1% sales tax for 2 years, increasing taxes on sales, uses of tangible personal property and of certain services, and on occupancy of hotel rooms, and amusement charges pursuant to Article 29 of the tax law of the State of New York, in order to extend the effective date through November 30, 2013, and I would move that.
There's a second. Leslie seconds that.
Let me make one comment. There were some questions about where all this verbiage came from, and was it approved by State Department of Taxation? And this, in effect, is words that we have used before. And yes, it was approved by the State Department of Taxation, and this is what we have to do every so often. I would only note that this was begun in December 1st, 1992, as a temporary addition. Before some of you were born, and you know, we're going to do it for 2 more years.
Any debate?
I moved it in second, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Kathy.
Well, the wording that I noticed was in the part entitled Section 2, where it talks about on and after March 1st, 1967. So apparently this is referring back to some sales tax that was first enacted as a temporary tax in 1967. So that got my attention, and the subsequent A, B, C's, and D's, and E's, and how it refers back to them all is kind of convoluted. I understand it's what the state wants and everything, but it really brings it home how in New York State, as in so many states, we've come to rely on temporary sales taxes as a way to offset the impact of the property tax. And I voted against it in committee partly because I believe you need to show that you're not in complete unanimity with important things like this so that we can have a wedge for discussion of the impact of sales tax versus property tax on people of lower income, for example. But I'm also cognizant of the irony of us voting to continue a temporary tax that, as far as I can tell, was first enacted in 1967.
Anything else? Ready to vote.
Can we have a roll call, please?
All right.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Mr. Stein, you ready to vote?
Yeah, I walked out to fill my coffee. This is on the sales tax, is that right?
Yes, yeah, Resolution okay, H. Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Keeper?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. McAsee?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 1 no.
All right. Thank you, Jim. And next one?
Next one. Resolution I. Related to the budget that you just saw, the 2.9 tax levy cap and 5.4 recommended, this resolution is authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number B of 2011, a local law overriding the tax levy limit for 2012, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Brian seconds that. Discussion?
Oh. Okay.
Kathy, Pat, Mike.
When people started first saying that it looked like Governor Cuomo was going to try and impose a tax cap, I was one of the people that said we should not be going to the governor and saying, well, if you're going to impose a tax cap, please don't let it be more than this amount. Please let it have a carve out for this. Please that, please the other. I really felt that we needed to be saying very strongly, tax cap doesn't make any sense, and here's why, and we oppose it. That may be water under the bridge, but in fact, if we start keeping tabs on every county that manages to override their tax cap because they've got to keep the escalating human services costs, among others, under control to keep their county afloat, what I think we'll find is that, in effect, counties are finally saying the tax cap doesn't make sense, it doesn't work for us. I don't have any problem supporting this motion or resolution, and I think that it's something that just makes sense in the current climate to give ourselves the flexibility, because it's pretty clear that 2%, or what the equivalent is with the carve-outs, is something that's very rigid, and what we need right now is some flexibility. So I'll be supporting this.
Pat, Mike, Nathan, and Jim.
Well, I think it appears to be pretty clear that even to fund mandated programs, we wouldn't be able to do that given the tax cap. Nevertheless, I feel as if, since this is the constraint that we're required to work with, that it's incumbent upon us to make a good faith effort to see what kind of impact the imposition of the 2% tax cap would have on our budget. And I don't see those numbers forthcoming, and I don't expect that they probably will be, but I'm not comfortable with a process that takes this initial step toward eventually enacting a local law to override the tax cap when we haven't yet begun to delve in to the impacts of the various the impacts of the tax cap on our budget this year. I'm not opposed if we have demonstrated to ourselves and to our constituents that we absolutely have to override the tax cap. I'm not saying that I will be opposed to doing that. But at this point, I haven't seen a timeline that would require us to take this step at this point. If someone were to be able to show me some legal requirements that said that in order to eventually do this prior to enacting your budget, you have to take this step right now, I would probably feel differently about that. But we haven't seen that. And I just feel like without that, I think it's premature. It feels premature to me to take this step at this time. So I'm not going to be supporting it now. It does not mean I won't be supporting an override at some point in the future.
Just for the public, this is to authorize a public hearing for our next legislative meeting on the local law. So this would not enact the cap, just for the public hearing. Mike, Nathan, Jim, Peter, Brian, myself, and then Dooley.
I think it's important that this go to public hearing early, so I certainly support sending this out for folks to comment on us, come to us and comment. I think what concerns me the most is the timing factor we can get into with this process. Also, the fact that the county administrator's proposed budget, if we fail to enact a budget by, I think, what, beginning of December sometime, becomes the budget. And if we haven't given us the latitude of exceeding a 5.4% budget, automatically exceeds that. I think we got a real problem there. I think that we need to look very carefully at the budget. I think 5.4% is higher than I want to support right now. But I also don't feel that we should box ourselves in. So I think we should go and hear from the public.
Thank you, Mike. Nathan?
I think Mike put that very well. I'm not going to add too much other than just Joe said that during our budget meeting, you know, that this gives us the maximum flexibility going into the budget season, and that's exactly how I see this. I think that I think almost all of us are going to be going into this budget season looking for additional, you know, spending reductions, and because that's our responsibility to have a fiscally prudent budget, and I think that's exactly what will happen, regardless of whether or not we have this resolution. I'll be supporting that, this resolution tonight for the public meeting.
Jim.
What makes me want to do this now, the public hearing, and then moving on, is to look at the calendar in December and back it up and see the timing that has things that have to happen in an order so that we can end up with a budget somewhere at the beginning of December. I've heard for a few years that we have to make tax bills. There are many things that have to happen within the last 30 days of 2011 so that things can move forward in a reasonable, organized sort of way. So my sense is we do the public hearing at the next meeting and then see what happens from that point. But I'm kind of looking ahead to December and trying to back things up in that order.
Peter, Brian, then myself, and then on.
Well, I too wondered what the rush was, and I had a discussion with Jonathan trying to understand the calendar and doing exactly what Jim suggested, figuring out when exactly is it that we have to do this. And it turns out it's not very much earlier than the middle of November, which is when we have to make this decision. I think it's premature to ask people's opinion before we have any idea of what it is we're asking. What is our situation? When we met 4 months ago, I voted for the 5.4% revenue hike. And the reason I did that was not that I didn't think that 5.4% was too much, given the current climate. It's just that the alternatives were impossible. And it seemed to me at that particular point, with a 2% tax cut, we would require something like, 11% program cuts, and I thought that that was just unlivable. And given that, I voted for a 5.4% planning cut, 5.4% planning revenue increase. Well, now we're stuck with the same 5.4% planning revenue increase, but we're no longer stuck with anything close to the 11% program cut that we were talking about. Now, if I had understood at that time that what 5.4% meant was a 3% program cut, I would not have voted for the 5.4%. Now, therefore, it seems to me, I think that I agree with my colleague, Pat. I think we have to make an honest attempt to stay within the tax cap and not break out of it unless we find it's absolutely necessary to do that. I think the tax cap is very popular with people. When I went around with my budget hearings, I got almost 100% of the people saying that, yeah, we ought to get out of the tax cap. But that was conditioned by the fact that I was telling them how disastrous it would be if we didn't get out of it because I was still working with those old numbers that had to do an 11% cut. Now, I just honestly, I think as soon as we vote to break out of the tax cap, that's the last we'll hear about tax cap. We'll start with the 5.4%, and we'll be adding to that, I'm sure, in the same way that we did last year. You shake your head, but that's my guess was what's going to happen. Therefore, I would like to see that tax cap on our minds, stuck up there all the time, as a real limit that we had to be thinking about. Was this particular OTR sufficiently important to go above the tax cap? I would like people to be thinking that. And I believe that if we get rid of that too early, then we've lost a lot of the discipline that we should have. An old rule I learned on the town board, if you're not going to vote for it, you shouldn't ask for a public hearing. And I believe that to be the case. I believe that you should only vote for a public hearing when you yourself support what it is you're going to do. So given that, I'm going to vote against it.
Okay, Brian?
I'm not sure I agree with that last statement. To me, that's the whole reason for having a public hearing on this. And my only wish was that we couldn't have done this 2 months ago before the formulation of the budget to really find out. We have public hearings all the time. This is one that affects every single property owner and business in the county. You know, you can talk about road preservations and stuff like that, and yeah, it affects a lot of people. This affects everyone. So I most definitely want to hear from everyone. Now, I do agree, Peter, that our starting point should be the adjusted tax cap number. And to listen to all OTRs above and beyond that, up to the recommended budget and even beyond that. But I definitely want to hear from the public on this. This is all they've been hearing since election time last year. So for a full year, everybody's been hearing about, you know, tax cap, 2%, you know. And, you know, you can talk to groups of 10 or 15 people, you know, all you want. But they're really not going to be paying attention until, boom, here is the budget. Now, what do you think? And we've got to hear from them.
Okay, I'm going to take a turn, then Dooley, then Frank. There's nothing about having this public hearing or about passing the local law that, in my mind, relieves us from the responsibility to exert discipline or make a good faith effort. I mean, I think that's exactly what we will do, and I never thought that we needed Albany to discipline us in terms of spending. You know, Albany didn't provide the mandate relief that they promised, and so we're in exactly the same position that we have been all this whole time that we've been talking about what a problem the tax cap is. There are some things that have, through our smart work and our department heads' discipline, have already done. So a lot of things have already been done, so that we're in a relatively good position. But I really agree with Kathy about the notion of flexibility, that this preserves for us, you know, our, I will say, independence, our ability to make these decisions, which we've been making since this was a county, you know, legislature, the ability to decide what's best for our community. It's completely within the tax cap legislation that this mechanism exists for us. And I don't think it should be anything out of the ordinary. I think I really feel it's taking the responsibility that is sort of ours to really manage our resources, manage the county, the taxpayers' resources and needs to the best of our abilities. So I think that I will certainly support the hearing and plan to support the law when it comes to that time. Dooley and then Frank.
Paying attention to Joe's PowerPoint tonight, he got to one page, which was sort of the summary page where you would see recommendations. The tax cap budget was outlined in bold, I don't know what color, black probably, a big rectangle, so that he called our attention to what OTRs would be possible under the tax cap. And then you march along to the right of that to arrive at what he's able to recommend with the changes in the cross currents brought up to date, which we could not possibly have had 2 months ago, and we certainly couldn't have had in April when we set 5.4%. So Joe has done what we asked him to do, and the fact that he has organized it with this bold rectangle around the cap says to me, Peter and Pat, that will be our focus on each page as we start to look at it. I agree with Mike and the other folks who spoke that it's important for us to put out this possible local law, which only will give us flexibility. It doesn't say we have to do something. But to put it out sooner rather than later, to hear from the public. And so I will be supporting this.
Frank and then Pam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things. First, in my opinion, In looking at the calendar, we have three expanded Budget Committee meetings prior to the public forum later this month. It seems to me if we want to try this on, we certainly have an opportunity at the public forum meeting. We have enough time to make some sort of an announcement to have a discussion or at least hear from the public at that. I tend to agree with Pat and with Peter that I think we need to make a good faith effort to at least delve into the budget before we start having fallback positions on raising the cap. I think that sends a false message to Albany. Some of us, and our chair in particular, have been adamant about the state's failure to give us mandate relief. And here's an opportunity for us to actually say, you know, we want to see what the real effect is on what you're dumping on us. I realize that we can always change our mind, but I think the calendar permits enough time for us to really get into this without having to worry that we're going to be up against it, and printing tax bills certainly isn't as we don't have to worry about that in September. We can print the tax bills right up until the November date. We've done that before, and I don't think that should be a guiding light on getting us to do this now. I'm perfectly content in trying to read through the format. Want to do that again, Dool?
I have it on when I travel in the car. And
that's okay. I woke everybody up. That's all right. At any rate, the I think it's premature for us to schedule a public hearing on this. I like what Peter said about if you're not going to support it, you shouldn't be voting for it. We can always institute this and float it by the public at the expanded budget committee. And I think it would be sending a false message that we already have established a G-dual. that we've already established a fallback position that we're going to raise this cap. The other concern I have, and it goes back to where most of this money is coming from the savings. As chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee, it certainly hasn't gone unnoticed by me that the Health Committee has, through DSS, through the Health Department, through the CHA, my all-time favorite, has stepped up and taken quite a hit to achieve some of these numbers in order to lower what the tax bite will be. I think we ought to give some of the other departments and some of you that serve on other committees an opportunity to have your department step forward and let's see what they can do. I think it's a little disingenuous to some of the departments under the Health Committee umbrella to have already stepped forward and taken quite a hit without or proposed hit, because we haven't voted on a budget yet, and using that as a as the basis for getting down to where we can achieve a 5.4% levy. I think we ought to let's see what else is out there before we start balancing the budget just on the backs of some of the departments that fall under this particular committee.
I think we'll find that every committee, every department has taken a really hard look. Pam, Carol, then Jim.
I have two questions. What is the latest date that we could pass this local law, you know, to have time to get it sent to the State Department? And I don't know, you want to answer that question first or whomever is going to answer it? Or shall I ask a second while you're looking up the first?
I guess I could. In looking at the calendar of the board meetings, the last date it could be passed is December, but typically, and I think it would be scheduled for November 15th to vote on the budget, and you'd have to really adopt this at least two meetings before then, unless you're going to have special meetings, because you have to set the public hearing and then have the public hearing. So I think the last possible date would be the October 18th meeting.
October 18th? Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Last date to vote on the override law?
No, to vote on exactly what you're voting on now, right, to set the public hearing and still be able to do the budget within the typical by November 15th, which I think is what the plan is, would be the October 18th date.
Okay. And my second question? At what point does the what would become the default budget? At what point would whichever of these become the default budget? I mean,
if the expanded budget committee doesn't approve an amended version of what I've given you, then the county administrator's budget is the default budget.
Okay, so the 5.4% would be the default budget.
That's right.
Not the 2%.
That's correct, because I've recommended 5.4.
Even if we hadn't voted to override them, sorry.
No, because it would be the county administrator's recommended budget.
But that's the question, is what if we haven't voted to override?
Then you've got a dilemma.
I thought that the cap amount became, if we, whatever you recommended, Joe, with all due respect, that the cap amount becomes the correct budget or the adopted
budget.
That's
right. You can't exceed the cap without that local law that waives the cap. So my budget is the recommended budget that historically is your default budget. If it's illegal,
right,
because the waiver hasn't been passed, then I'd seek counsel. I don't know whether it would automatically defer back to the cap budget in this budget or not. I mean, it's a new question.
No, I think it would refer back to your budget, and it would be out of compliance, and the cap law provides penalties, et cetera, for being out of compliance. But right, that's what would happen.
And so it would be a 5.4% budget.
Right.
Right.
And then we would have adopted a budget which is out of compliance.
And in a sense, you've made it easy for the default to be 2.9, because that's the other level that's aggregated in all these pages.
Did you go to jail, Jonathan, any of us? Only you.
All right.
Only you.
No. All right. I've got, Pam, you're all set?
Yeah.
Okay, we got Carol, Jim, Leslin, and Dooley.
Okay. I do recall that we talked about this question back at the budget retreat in April, and we came to some answers. You might want to look at the notes, but... I will say that I will certainly support this. I believe that we should hear from the public soon and frequently. I'd prefer to hear from the public. Unlike Frank, I would prefer to hear from the public separately, to give them the opportunity to weigh in to us separately on this than on the budget items. And if we fold it into the one budget hearing, we're talking, what, 2 or 3 hours for everything that they always did with us, to weigh in a really difficult year for every program and every department, and have to do this as well. And I think that doesn't make any sense. So that's my thoughts on this, the hearing itself. On the budget, I do agree with what Frank said. I think that the staff has done an incredible amount of heavy lifting for us. We were facing 12%, 14%, 15, what was it, 15.9, whatever the number was that was what we might have been facing. They've come to us with something all of them participated in that's at the 5.4%. The full amount of additional items would be $400,000, which would be another 1%. So the worst we're looking at, assuming we added it all back, would be 6.4%. So I just think I really appreciate the amount of heavy lifting they've done for us, and I hope that we trust some of their decisions and not penalize them for having come to us with something that already makes such, does a lot of the work.
Jim Leslin Dooley.
I'm going to state the obvious. Big departments have big money in their budget, and they have to step up. But, you know, to say that health department and DSS took a bigger hit and the rest of the departments should take the same is not correct. The health department worked on things. They had money in their budget, and they looked and they rearranged their budget in such a way that they helped the situation out. And creative budgeting and DSS did the same thing. Other smaller departments, they took hits or not. But clearly, you know, I've said it, and whether or not anyone listens to what individuals say, that this was a year that big departments were going to have to take big hits. Other departments may take a smaller hit or none at all. Across the board was not the way to go, and we had to start somewhere. That's where we started. This is where we're going to end up. So, I'm hoping people support at least having the public hearing. All of you have been here long enough to know that people will come out on both sides of the issue, and that's what our job is, and that's what we have to listen to, and then we have to make a decision on that.
So. Okay, Leslin.
Thanks, Jim. I was just making sure we were still talking about the public hearing.
Well, I just wanted to bring that back.
I got you. I feel you with it. Jonathan, as it gets to be really late at night, none of us remembers anything, really. But what is the time frame between the public hearing and when we have to pass the local law? We have to vote on the local law.
Interestingly,
maximum.
There is no thing in the law which actually says what the time is that one has to take. Mm-hmm. There are cases which say it has to be a reasonable time, whatever that means. But it doesn't have to be that day. It doesn't necessarily have to be at the next meeting. Mm-hmm. But if it's a year later, that's not going to be good. And there's
that's
no definite.
Reasonable.
It's not in the law a day. You know, there's a date for how many days you have to publish, how many days it has to be out there. But how many days between the public hearing and the vote, there's no specific number on that.
Thank you very much. Did other people know that? Or is it just
no,
me?
That's good.
Oh, okay. All right. I appreciate that. So even if we go ahead and have this public hearing on the 20th, it is? Yes, the 20th. We don't have to vote on the law at our next meeting, which will still give us time for more of the voting portions of the budget and see where we are. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you very much.
Okay, Julie. And then I hope we're ready to vote.
It seems to me, I heard at an earlier meeting that there actually was some information from the state level about what would happen if we passed an illegal budget, that it's not just that Peter Stein will go to jail, it's that we will get told that we have to make up the difference at a future date. And I wondered if Joe might remember in more detail what that was.
They calculate the amount that you've gone over your cap, and they direct you to put an equal amount in reserve to have it available in the next budget cycle to be able to reduce your levy. So.
Okay.
That's the requirement.
Thank you.
And Peter Stein has to go to jail.
Right. Yeah. But
he's thrilled by it.
Peter.
Could I ask right now that I not be boarded out?
If Irene is watching, I hope. She knows we're laughing. I hope we're ready to vote. All right. Should we have a roll call on this?
Can you restate
Martha?
This is to authorize a public hearing on the local law that would allow us to override the state designated tax cap for next year. And the public hearing would be September 20th, our next legislative meeting at 5:30. So,
Father, can I please ask one clarifying question of Joe? So in answer to the previously asked question about then what happens if we don't pass this law and we don't make any changes to the budget, then from what you just said, your recommended budget will become the adopted budget.
My 5.4% budget would become the budget, which would be in violation of the law.
Right.
The state would come in and say, you've raised it too high. You need to take the excess and create a reserve out of it to apply later to give the money back.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right. Although it may be 3 years later when they audit us. Seriously, we talked with the controller about this. That's exactly what he said.
And so we'll figure out how many of us are still here in 3 years. All right, the roll call vote.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here. Oh, yes.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chuck?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Pryor?
No.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
10 ayes, 5 noes.
The motion passes. There will be a public hearing at 5:30, September 20th. All right. Jim, anything else on your report?
No, that concludes my report.
All right. Thank you all. Leslin, I think we did Public Safety, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslin, we've been Claiborne Chair.
WDIC is hosting, and you all heard about this at our last meeting, and I hope that some of you will be able to attend on Thursday the 8th, a conversation on the effects of 9/11. It will be held. There's some conflicting information from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Greater Ithaca Activity Center, a.k.a. GIAC, at 301 West Court Street. I just saw something in my email again today about, you know, the states across the country and New York State, I don't remember what it is, human service somebody, is really inviting people to engage in these conversations. We chose this date so that it did not conflict with what we knew would be commemoration happening, especially on the day itself, to, you know, give people some opportunity to just talk. So you each should have gotten a little note coming around with the press release from Marcia and the flyer attached. And we would like to see some, if not all of you, at this event on Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslin. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee will be meeting on the 14th at 3:30. The only other item that I'd like to give you a heads up on is the review of the proposed RFP responses on the CHA. We're in the process, that special committee that Joe established is in the process of setting up a committee meeting to review those responses. We hope to have a report shortly on where we stand with that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Frank. Minutes of the previous meeting, August 16th, 2011. Can I get a motion on those? Will moves, Jim seconds. Any discussion? All in favor of the minutes as presented, August 16th, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 13 opposed. 2 opposed. It passed 13 to 2. That is it, right? I would just mention that the next time I hope we'll all be together is what time on 4 o'clock on Monday for the first expanded budget committee meeting. All right. Thank you all. Motion to adjourn. We are adjourned. Okay. Thank you.